And we get it underway by welcoming to the program our friend Nick Coit of ABC6 in Providence. Hello there, Nick.
Hello there, Rich. What's happening?
Well, it's great to have you with us. You were scheduled to be on yesterday, but you were good enough to be your usual flexible self and move to today, and we're glad to have you here.
Well, I'm glad to do it, Rich. I'm glad to be on with you, and hopefully we can just talk in sports for a few minutes can bring a sense of normalcy back. Believe me, my thoughts and my prayers are with everybody up there, and I've been thinking of everybody in Maine. Obviously, I'm so fond of the state and living up there a couple of years, and all my reporting friends who are out there on scene. They're so talented, but I know how difficult these sorts of stories can be. So, I'm thinking of all of them. I'm thinking of all of you, and like I said, if I can bring a little normalcy with some sports, with a little bit of humor, and lighten up the day, then happy to do it.
Well, that sounds good. Well, speaking of normalcy, it was kind of like old times there last week with the Patriots getting a big win, a quarterback leading them down the field for a final drive. That was nice. I'm not sure it can last, but for one fleeting moment, it was great.
Hey, you know what? It's amazing what can happen when an offensive line actually stands up tall and actually wins in the trenches. They finally found something. To me, it was noticeable in warmups when I saw Michael Winnow at right tackle. I said, "Ooh, they're making a change here," and I'm like, "This could be good. We'll see." And it held up well. Mac Jones felt comfortable. He had a great day, obviously, and yeah, it led to success offensively, finally, for this Patriots team that's just been desperately searching for it.
Yeah, Mac Jones had a great day. Not a big running game, but I thought one of the biggest plays on that drive was the catch and run by Ramondre Stevenson.
Yeah, he looked better, too. I like that they sort of switched things up in the way that they were, starting drives. I think offensively it wasn't just, okay, line up, let's try to run the ball, get 1 yard on the first play of a drive. But a lot of times it was, okay, let's start out here. Max maybe in shotgun. Max, quick pass. Okay, let's get the Mario Douglas going. Okay, 7 or 8 yards. Maybe they move the sticks. Like, it seemed like there was more of a sense of tempo, a sense of urgency. And really, they tried to get their playmakers involved early and often in drives. And I think it sparked a lot of things. The Stevenson, catch and run in that last drive is one of the standouts, as you mentioned.
And defensively, just enough big plays when they needed them, getting a huge turnover and stopping what they needed to stop.
Yeah, and that's been impressive because the big injuries have been on that side of the ball. But I don't think the Patriots have really wavered much there. I think they've stayed steady and consistent. And that's great to see. I think they had a sense of urgency when Christian Gonzalez went down. They said, okay, well, we got to shore this up very quickly. They had an opportunity to go get J.C. Jackson. They did. They've been getting healthier, having Jonathan Jones for, this game to play against Tyreek Hill. He always seems to be a kryptonite, if you will, to Hill's Superman. Obviously that helps. And I thought Christian Barmore last week really stood out, probably for the second straight week, and that's a great thing to see with a guy that's in his third year in the league.
I still think it was no coincidence that they played this well with Bledsoe and Mike Vrabel in the house.
Oh yeah, no, you feel as as Mr. Kraft said, they were always ready, willing, and Vrabel to win the game, and so there you go. They felt good. There was something in the air. I thought maybe the presence of Dante Scarnecchia was the biggest thing. Cause it's like Scar walks in the building and all of a sudden your offensive line's working well. So that's I don't know. Coincidence? Maybe not.
Oh, I think you're right on that. Well, this week it doesn't get any easier. Not only another division rival, but on the road at a place that has not been all that welcoming to the Patriots in recent years.
No, it's true. Miami is a house of horrors. I believe they're 2-8 in their last 10 down there. It's tough, but look, if you can play, the way you played defensively in that first matchup against this team, keep things in front of you, don't allow the big play, and your offense can build off the momentum and the rhythm that it had last week, then you're going to feel a lot better about it. If you can protect Mac Jones, again, against a team that, surprisingly, when I looked at the stats today, Miami's defense third in the league in total sacks, which I was like, wow, that's pretty darn good. But, you know, if you can protect them a little bit more and make them feel comfortable again, then I think you'll be able to build off them, that momentum. And, you know, that's a great thing. And it's just so funny, Rich. Like last week we're thinking, oh, boy, you know, 1-5, Buffalo's coming to town. You know, where's the season going? But like I said to you over the summer about the Red Sox with these Patriots, just when we thought they were out, here we go.
Nick Coit with us here on Downtown. Now, right before game time last week, we first heard the news that Belichick had secretly signed a contract extension. Do you think that's something that Belichick people put out there to improve his negotiating position if things go poorly down the stretch?
I don't think it was a coincidence that we all of a sudden heard some sort of something on Bill Belichick's contract the day the Patriots were going into a game 1-5 with the division-leading Buffalo Bills coming to town. Just seems just a little bit too much of a coincidence. So, yeah, I do think somebody out there, whether it was Bill himself, whether it was somebody that's close to him, wanted that out there so that it could sort of complicate the conversation around it. But you haven't heard a ton more about it this week because all of a sudden, oh, look, they won a football game. Everybody's feeling good. Chance to go to Miami, build off of it again. So interesting how that all works.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little Red Sox. They got their man. There were some people that weren't interested in the job, but I don't know. Anything is good, but I like Breslow and what seems to be a nice balance of baseball experience, appreciation of stats and that kind of thing, and a pretty darn fine education for a guy who's going to run a baseball op.
Oh, yeah, he's wicked smart. Definitely wicked smart, which is good. And we knew that, I think, when he was a player here, you know, because we had heard he was a Yale guy and whatnot. And but I like that he checks a lot of boxes in sort of the new school thinking and the old school thinking.
Right.
I like that this is a guy that played the game. He was on the field. He saw it. So he has that sort of knowledge. Maybe he's got a little institutional knowledge about some veteran he might bring in or something along those lines. Like that, that helps. He knows what it's like as a player. And I just, one thing that Bloom did never got was this market, this area, and what baseball is in Boston and in New England. Craig Breslow was here and won a World Series with the Red Sox in 2013. That, to me, goes a long way. He has seen it. He knows what it's like. He knows what the expectations are. And I would think that being as smart as he is and having the experience here, he would never get in front of a microphone and call the Boston Red Sox underdogs. When Bloom did something like that, it was just like you would cringe. Or, you know, when he introduced Rafael Devers in his contract extension, saying, you know, we've been through our ups and downs. Dude, you would never hear for the 86-year curse. Come on, man. Don't try to play with me with that, you know. So it's like that stuff always bothered me with Bloom because I'm like, you don't get it. And Craig Breslow is here, and I think he's going to get it. And that, to me, was that, you know, put aside all the qualifications, all the good things he's done with the Cubs organization, you got to get it here, and I think Craig Breslow will get it, and I think that goes a long way.
All right, Craig Breslow calls you up on the phone and says, Nick, I need to talk to a fellow deep thinker. Who's the first guy I should try to sign in this offseason?
Ooh, you know, I think this Japanese pitcher, Yamamoto, I think there's something to him. I'm at least looking at him, taking a look. Are you finding the next big thing coming from there? It seems like there's a lot of hype and it seems to be worthy. So I need arms, and Craig Breslow, I think, is being brought in because he has a lot of success when it comes to finding young arms and young pitching and or standout pitching. And so that's a guy that I'm probably looking at, you know, and get yourself just at the very least, get yourself in the Ohtani conversation. Maybe you don't sign him. Maybe the Red Sox miss out. Maybe it's like the Giants or somebody like that. But at least put the Red Sox on the radar again of we're the Red Sox, so our names are connected to all the big free agents like the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Giants, all those teams. Because the last few years with Bloom, we all rolled our eyes because we're like, they're not going to sign Carlos Rodon, or they're not going to sign Ohtani, or they're not going to sign whatever. name, big free agent name A. You know, they just weren't there. And so, to me, I think that's one of the most important things is get them out there again. Like, hey, we're a big market team. We're going to be involved with these names. But pitching is where I'm looking first. And so this Yamamoto guy, I'm excited about the prospect of.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'd like to get him. And give me somebody like an Aaron Nola to an experienced guy who has won postseason games. I'll take that. But I completely agree with you that the Red Sox need to go back to being that team that whenever there's a big-name free agent, they're in the conversation.
100%. It's just that was the most bothersome thing, and that's why fans were rolling their eyes. It was just like, dude, we're the Red Sox. Like, come on. Like, we can't be run like a small-market team because they're not a small-market team, so stop running us that way. We don't want to hear that. Nobody wants that excuse in Boston, and so hopefully it gets back to that.
What do you do with Alex Verdugo?
I deal him. I trade him. You know, I think especially if Cora's around here and back and managing the team, I think there was just too much of a butting of heads. I think somebody will find value out there. And can you get somebody to, you know, again, send you pitching? You know, can you find pitching that way? You know, I think you have, you know, the outfield depth that you need. I think there's guys there that you can work with, even younger players. So, I'm looking for, you know, a suitor, if you will, for Alex Verdugo. And if you can find pitching, I will trust for now Craig Breslow's eye when it comes to that.
Nick Coit with us here on Downtown. Celtics season is underway. All kinds of excitement about this team and the search for that 18th banner. Do you like what you've seen of this new combination of players that that Brad has put together for Joe Mazzulla?
It's tough to not watch that first game in New York and watch the space that Kristaps Porzingis has on the floor and say, and drool. I mean, drool. Like, you're drooling at it because you're like, wow. I mean, how did this guy go from this team to that team to this team? And we know, you know, at some point we'll find out it's health. You know, he's a 7-footer. You know, he was expected to be the guy in other places. But being on the floor with talent like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Drew Holiday, I think is really going to open things up for Porzingis. He could really have a standout year. So just keep that guy healthy. He's got a great attitude about it. I think this top six for the Celtics has a great attitude so far in terms of the sacrifice. And I think one of the smartest things that Joe Mazzulla did this offseason was that email that we keep hearing about that he wrote to some of the former Celtics and Celtics alumni and Celtics legends and said, come to the gym, be around us, be here. Talk to these guys. Interact with us. You're part of this. And I think by having Paul Pierce, Rajon Rondo, Sam Cassell, who I just love seeing on the coaching staff now and wearing Celtics green again, I think it helps because these guys will come in and say to Jason Tatum, like, dude, you want to win a championship? Here's how you do it. And I think the more and more they hear that, the more and more they're going to look at it and say, well, we want to get there. You know, we've been so close. We want to have our own banner. We want to be able to tell these stories when we're old and fat and gray. And, you know, hopefully that helps. But I think it was just a really smart move to sort of galvanize that history, you know, and put it behind this current team.
And I like the fact, too, there might be some guys who would be intimidated to look around and see coaches in waiting on that bench, including a Van Gundy hanging around. But Mazzulla seems to appreciate the help and the expertise and seems pretty secure in the fact that that's what they're there for. They're not there to be his replacement.
Yeah, and I think the vote of confidence was the fact that, okay, they bring in all these guys, but, you know, I think this offseason easily they could have said, well, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it worked out, Joe. Maybe you're not ready, you know, after watching last season. But, no, Brad Stevens stood right by him and said, no, you're the coach. You know, we're going to bring in some help. We're going to build a staff for you. We're going to bring in different voices, and we're going to back you up. And what I think it's similar to is when the Red Sox first brought in Cora. You know, you remember there was guys behind him that had a lot of major league experience.
Right.
And above him, they brought in Ron Renicki on the bench, who I think was a great bouncing off point, you know, for a young manager like Cora at the time. And they brought in Tony La Russa to stand next to Dave Dombrowski. And that to me is very similar, I'd say, to, you know, Jeff Van Gundy, a guy that just, you know, was a manager slash coach, has a lot of experience, knows the game, and hopefully can give you a, you know, a different sort of voice. So I sort of equate it to that and say, I think it's just the more support you can give him, you know, the better. And I don't think Sam Cassell, Charles Lee, or anybody that's on that bench is going after Joe's job. I think they're there to help, and they know what kind of effort it takes collectively to go and win a championship, especially a guy like Cassell.
Nick Coit, great stuff as always, my friend. Thanks so much for being with us today. Hope your weekend goes well.
Right back at you, Rich. Always a pleasure, and you all take care up there.
You got it. We'll catch you soon. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Rich.